All right, here we go.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Parents Tool Talk Radio with your host, Jody Johnston Powell, licensed social worker, certified family life educator, second generation parent educator, and author of the award-winning book, The Parents Tool Shop, the universal blueprint for building a healthy family. For over 25 years, Jody has been training parents and family service professionals nationwide and serving as a parenting expert to the media worldwide. Now, through the Parents Tool Talk radio show and teleseminar series, Jody shares her practical advice and introduces you to other experts who can give you proven effective advice on the issues that matter most to parents. So get ready to be informed, entertained, and enlightened as we join Jody now.
Hello, and welcome everyone to Parents Tool Talk Radio. I'm so glad you've joined us today. I'm Jody Johnston Powell, author of The Parents Tool Shop and your host. Before we get started, I always want to remind all foster parents to check in at the beginning and the end of the show if you want to qualify for continuing education credits. So just call in or use the chat room. The directions are at parentstooltalk.com/info. That's parentstooltalk.com/info, I-N-F-O. In preparation for this month's radio show on blended families, I've just been recalling all of the hundreds of parents that I've worked with who are part of a blended family who have attended my workshops over the years, and every single one of them was really committed to making their new family work. And usually the parents and the children were working together as a team, which is an absolute delight to see, but sometimes they just needed some practical tips for kind of getting through the most common universal challenges that can happen when blending two or more families. Every now and then, they really faced some deeper challenges. And to that end, I've invited a special guest to join us today to discuss those special challenges. Her name is Deborah Cashin, and she is a certified family life educator and founder and co-owner of Parenting Partnerships Incorporated, which provides family life education to families, schools, community organizations, and businesses in the Dallas, Fort Worth, and Houston, Texas areas. She primarily works with high-conflict families who are experiencing divorce, separation, or ongoing custody issues. Deborah has over 25 years of experience working individually with families, teaching groups of parents, creating and administering family school partnerships, and has been a guest speaker for organizations across the U.S. She's also the author of Creating Parenting Notebooks, which is a curriculum for teen parents. All of Deborah's programs are a unique blend of research and application, and this approach really helps parents reduce everyday challenges that affect both professional and personal relationships. She provides the hands-on tools that parents can use to help their children build character, develop responsibility, problem solve, and become resourceful adults. Deborah believes that people do better when they know better, and that family life education helps parents enjoy the most important job they will ever have. She also has a strong personal belief that children have the right to grow up in homes where love is communicated unconditionally, children feel safe and secure, respect is clearly modeled, children are taught the life skills they will need to navigate adult life, and children are allowed to develop feelings of self-worth. So, Deborah, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you. I enjoyed having an opportunity to talk to everyone.
Good. Well, before we dive into our discussion, I'd like to tell our listeners how they can call in with live questions. We really enjoy getting participation and having people call in or submit a question through the chat room. So let me real quickly, before we start talking, tell them how to do that. If you have a question and you haven't called in already, you can call area code 347-205-9654, and that's just to listen in. When you have a question, if you'll press the 1 key on your telephone keypad, it'll raise your hand, and Chris, our producer, will be checking questions throughout the show, and he'll see that you've got a question. And when we are in between questions or we take a breath and are talking, we can call you in and pose your question to our expert. You can also, if you are listening online, just go to the Parents Tool Talk chat room during the interview, and my producer, Chris Gooley, is monitoring the chat room, and he'll take your question and pass that on to us. So just go to parentstooltalk.com, click the play or chat button just beneath today's show title and description. Now, let me get back to Deborah Cash and start getting into our discussion on blended families. If you could, help my listeners get to know you a little bit. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how or why did you choose to work with blended families? How did you come to be an expert in that area?
Well, I'll try to make a long story very short.
Okay, good.
What got me involved in general parent education to begin with was having four children in less than 6 years.
Wow.
And I was not a young mom, and I was very anxious to find out the right way to do this and started researching areas to get information on parent education. And back in the early 80s, there was not a whole lot out there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started creating my own and ended up creating parenting centers in three different communities where I lived. And as a consequence, had access to a lot of training, eventually went back to school and got my degree in family studies and my certification as a family life educator. And then I started my own business in 2002, and one of the things that I discovered in the process of trying to provide parent education was there was a perception that the only people that sought out parent education were those that were court-ordered or mandated through Child Protective Services, et cetera. And it was my goal to help families understand what I learned by my own practical experience, that parent education is probably one of the most wonderful services out there.
Yes, and that is a big myth, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And
yeah.
So, but to create a business, I had to go where there was a perceived need. So I initially started working with parents who had a variety of challenges, and one of those were high-conflict divorcing families or families who were involved in ongoing custody issues. And as a consequence of working with that group of people, I also started working with a lot of parents who were trying to blend families.
So now, and you had mentioned a little bit, a couple sentences back about getting the CFLE certification. And I know that in our pre-show conversation, you had told me that you really thought it was important for professionals who are working in this area to have that credential. Could you share with our listeners what you shared with me, why you think that's so important?
Well, certification as a family life educator recognizes a proven background and understanding in each of 10 family life substance areas. While many CFLEs work specifically in one discipline, such as parent education or marriage enrichment, their understanding of the areas that affect today's families allows them to be more effective in their efforts to educate and work with families. And the designation of certified family life educator, it recognizes the educational, preventative, and enriching nature of the work that we do. And CFLEs are held accountable to a governing board, and we're required to recertify every 5 years, which means that we need to keep up our education. We're not working on outdated research. You know, everything is kept current. And the 10 family areas or 10 substance areas, I think, are very, I wouldn't say broad-based, but they certainly cover the important areas of family life education, such as family systems therapy, parent education, the internal dynamics of families, growth across the lifespan, including mm-hmm. child development, family resource management, mm-hmm. again, parent education, ethics, et cetera. So it really lets those who are familiar with the certification process understand that it's not easy to get your certification as a family life educator. You have to be qualified to do this kind of work.
So it really is going to be, if people understand what that certification means, then people can understand that you aren't one-dimensional, that you don't have a degree in one area and one area of expertise, that to even get that certification, that you had to show proficiency in what is it, 8 out of the 10, I think.
That's correct.
Of the areas. So, and I think we're going to come back to the importance of that on the back end of this conversation when we're talking about sharing resources, because you're in the Texas area, and we have listeners from all over the world. So I know on the back end you're going to be giving us some advice on how to find someone like you in our communities to help us if they need more assistance and maybe some services in their area. So we'll come back to that a little bit later. What I'd like to lead into, and I always kind of, you know, want to start off with a little bit of foundation building with my guests around whatever the topic is. And in talking about blended families, I think one of the issues that comes up is when we're blending families, we're going to be talking about a lot of the challenges, but one of the things I think that it starts is that right from the very beginning, sometimes there's confusion over who has what rights to do what. And I think when a step-parent comes into a family, I think there's a lot of questions about parents' rights and what rights do we have as a parent, what rights do we have if we're step-parents. I know if step-parents feel that they're disempowered from being able to fully be in a parental role, it can be that, well, you know, you're not my real dad, I don't have to listen to you, or those kinds of things. Share with us a little bit about rights and suggestions that you have in that area of what maybe step-parents can and can't do.
Well, a lot of it depends on what constitutes your family. I mean, if you're bringing a step-parent into a family that has never had children, you know, then you're always questioning whether or not that parent, that step-parent, knows what they're talking about. Or if you're bringing two parents into the family, both are bringing children into the blended family, you know, one has their parenting style and the way they've handled things prior to joining these two families, and the other has theirs. So in order to clarify, and I think it's really important that both parents, whether they both have children in the relationship or only one has children in the relationship, both of them take the time to sit down and communicate with one another and talk about what their expectations are. And they need to be realistic in their expectations. Things are not going to be perfect overnight. It's, you know, just because you want this to happen isn't going to make it happen. So be realistic, be patient, and know that you're going to have to give a lot of time, energy, love, attention, affection, and it's the small things that you do on an everyday basis that are going to allow an appropriate blending of this family. If there's no one major thing that you need to do, I mean, there's no one magic fix.
Mm-hmm.
And as we get further into the context of this show, one of the things that we were going to talk about was family meetings. And I think those family meetings are crucial to blended families because it allows every family member to have an opportunity to contribute and to be heard.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, as we talk further, we'll get into more of those issues. But it's just important that the lines of communication be open. And you share your expectations, whatever they are, and you learn to compromise.
So, and actually, Deborah, if you could speak a little bit more into your phone, you're a little bit on the soft side. So do both parents, both the birth parents and the step-parent, do both of them have equal rights in a blended family that in terms of parenting the children that are in their home, maybe that weekend or that week, whenever they're both, quote, on duty, do they have equal rights?
Well, there again, I think it depends on the individual family and what their expectations are. If I were to have a blended family, yes, I would hope that my children would treat their step-parent respectfully. And I think that it's setting, when you talk about equal rights, you know, if you're sharing a home with someone, then yes, you've got some equal rights there. And the children need to respect the rules of that household.
Okay. And I think the term rights was leading me to think more of a legal right kind of thing, that there was a clear black and white answer. And what I'm hearing from you is it's up to each individual family to decide. It's not a legal issue.
It is not a legal issue.
Okay.
No, it is not.
Okay. Because that's the question that I hear oftentimes is that step-parents feel that they don't have the right, like they could get in trouble legally if they or to discipline the children or whatever. And, of course, you know, we would be talking about appropriate discipline. You know, of course, it would violate anyone's rights if they were doing something inappropriate. But I just think sometimes that step-parents feel disempowered to fully step into a parental role, more from a I'm-not-allowed-to standpoint And what I'm hearing from you is that it's really up to each family to decide what might be appropriate. For example, teenage children, the relationship would be different with a step-parent than it would be a very young child. So that's what I'm hearing then, is it's up to each family.
Definitely.
Okay.
And the most important thing for parents to remember is that they need to communicate their expectations.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they need to set some guidelines down for the entire family. And there may be things that a step-parent, I mean, safety, of course, whether you're
right.
a step-parent or a parent, a child's safety is of utmost concern. So there are certain things that a step-parent better step in and do.
Right,
you know, to provide safety for children. But I really think the most important part of that is that they keep the lines of communication open, they talk to one another about what their expectations are, and as a family, they sit down and develop some guidelines for how the adults in the household interact with the children in the household.
Mm-hmm. And involving the children in that, in which
yes.
through family councils and family meetings and things like that.
Right.
Okay, yes. And those are extremely important techniques to use in terms of doing that through a family council kind of atmosphere. So, yeah, maybe we can give more details on that on the back end if we have time.
Right.
I know we have a lot of common challenges that I just hear over and over again with blended families that they share with me in our workshops. So if I could, you know, kind of pick your brain on some of these, let me ask you on behalf of these blended families that I work with. I know a lot of issues come up in blended families around visitation and just even trying to coordinate that parenting time around visitation. Can you share with us some of the common challenges and suggestions that you have for parents around that?
Well, I can kind of bullet them for you. The biggest challenge is, are we going to have his children on the first, third, and fifth, and her children on the second and fourth weekends, or can we set it up to where we have all the children together on the first, third, and fifth, and no children on the second and fourth, for instance?
Okay.
And I work with a lot of families that are able to coordinate or maybe even change the weekends for visitation or the days for visitation
mm-hmm.
with their children's other parent to work well with a blended family. And, of course, that's the ideal situation.
Right, that's ideal.
All these families work together to make sure that this works for the children.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because you do have some parents who are very resentful when they say, well, you don't have any children twice a month.
Right.
You know, and I have children all the time because my blended family doesn't work like yours.
Right.
But, you know, the ideal situation is to work with all the parents that are involved to try to set up a visitation plan that's in the best interest of the children.
Okay. And so in implementing that visitation where you've got times where you may have several children, all children, no children, and it's just this constant, it's almost as though the family structure is constantly changing. You know, it's a few days our family looks like this, and then the next few days it looks like this. So what are some of the logistics of parenting from one home to parenting from two or more homes? In terms of being different, not just the timing of the visitation, but what are some of the dynamics that happen of the logistics of that?
Well, you've got different rules in different homes, and if you've got any number of combinations, you may have four families that are trying to blend in two households
mm-hmm.
and two separate households. And, of course, we all bring what we're used to with us, and within that individual household, well, within household number one, you've got two adults who are trying to blend their rules, their parenting styles, et cetera. In household number two, you may have two parents that and two sets of children that are trying to blend, et cetera. So the parents in each household need to get their act together and what their expectations are and what the household rules are. And then, if possible, share with the other family members, the other parents of those children. What we try to teach when we teach our co-parenting course on having children who have two homes is you can't have everything the same. It's impossible to have that expectation.
Mm-hmm.
or to fulfill that expectation. What you need to do is focus on the most important issues. For instance, and that would depend on what age your children are. It could be bedtime, you know, to have a common bedtime for these kids, regardless of which home they're in. It could be getting them to and from their extracurricular activities. You know, what's the process? What's the expectation for transportation, et cetera? Who's going to be attending the extracurricular activities? You know, is it going to be comfortable for the child, for both sets of parents, or all sets of parents and step-parents to attend any kind of performances or extracurricular activities? Oftentimes, you know, this is my time with the kids. I don't want the other parent there. Well, you've got, again, to put the child's best interest at heart, because the child may want both parents there. And those are the challenges that I see with some of the clients that I work with, is that it's having different rules in different homes, where the child will have a bedtime at 10 o'clock at one home and 8 o'clock at the other. You know, which house do you think that child's going to want to stay at? Or the extracurricular activities. You know, one parent will say, well, I didn't sign them up for that, so they're not going to go to that while I have them. And the other parent says, well, you know, we signed them up, they're going to go. So it's extracurricular activities. It's the general household rules, what is what the expectations are in each one of their households. The more similar those rules are, the less chaotic it's going to be for the children.
Right.
The less challenges there will be in each individual household.
And that would be the ideal. And that's what I want to talk about after we take a quick break, just to let do a quick station ID and let people know how to call in with questions. Because I think we've touched on the ideals, and I think the challenges the parents face often is dealing with what's not ideal.
Right.
So let me just take a few quick minutes just to welcome folks who just joined the show so they know who we are and what we're talking about. This is Parents Tool Talk. I'm your host, Jody Johnston Powell, author of The Parents Tool Shop, and today we're talking with Deborah Cashin, who is a certified family life educator and founder of the Parenting Partnerships Incorporated in Houston, Texas. If you have any questions at all about our topic today on blended families, you can either call in at area code 347-205-9654. Again, that's 347-205-9654. Now, you can just listen to the show that way, but if you have a question, if you'll hit the number one key on the phone pad, then that will raise your hand and our producer will see that you've got a question and we'll call on you. You can also, if you're listening online, send us a question using the chat room at www.parentstooltalk.com, and you just look for the play/chat button, and you can get into the chat room. Our producer is monitoring the chat room, so if you've got a question, he can pass that on. While we're taking a break, let me just give you real quick, if you would like to get access to this month's bonus resources, which about 40 after the hour, I'll tell you what those are. If you'd like to get those bonus resources, then if you would sign up for the Parents Tool Talk mailing list, you will also receive links to our featured resources, both from Parents Tool Shop and from our guests every month, information about upcoming shows, tips on how to download our radio show recordings to your computer, how to subscribe to an RSS feed, what that means, and how to do it very simply, and more. It's really the only way to get exclusive information about our future radio shows and access to the bonus resources and discounts that we only offer to our loyal listeners. So to sign up for that mailing list, just go to parentstooltalk.com/links. That's www.parentstooltalk, all one word, .com/links, L-I-N-K-S. So know that I will never share your private information with anyone for any reason. That is just exclusively for our Parents Tool Talk mailing list, and you will also, I believe, get the Parents Tool Shop newsletter. So just tune in for that. Now, I'm not seeing any hands up in the call room. And so let's actually get back to our expert, because we're going to dive into some dicey issues here, because I think we've talked a lot about the ideal. So let's talk about when it's not so ideal and some of the challenges that arise when we're trying to blend families. I think if we can talk just a little bit about what parents can do to help their children become friends, and then I'd like to lead a little bit, kind of go back to some of the other issues that we had talked about a little bit before in terms of parenting styles and transitions between homes, because I know those are really big issues. So give us some quick tips on helping children become friends.
Don't push it would be my first tip, because you've got to give them time to learn to get to know one another. And when you try to force a relationship, sometimes that doesn't work too well. They each have to have an opportunity to have their own space. You know, I have families that I work with that, you know, there are three kids from mom's family, three kids from dad's family, and they're trying to fit everybody into a four-bedroom house,
mm-hmm.
which is not uncommon.
Right.
And so they're trying to decide who's going to share rooms with whom, you know, especially if they are all on the same visitation schedule with
right.
their other families.
And they've had their own room in the past, maybe.
And they may have had their own room in the past.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the tendency, you know, a lot of us have some common sense out there, and the tendency would be to put similar age children, similar gendered children, in the same room together, thinking that they might have more in common with one another.
Mm-hmm.
But when you do that in a blended family without the children's agreement, oftentimes that creates more challenges.
Right.
So we go back to the family meeting.
That's right. That's what I'm thinking.
It really is important for each one of the children in both families that are trying to be blended into one to have a voice, to be heard. Now, you may not be able to do everything that they want you to do. I mean, there are no easy answers to any of this, but they need to have an opportunity to express their concerns. They may want to stay with their own siblings, regardless of the age difference. Their sibling may want an opportunity to be in a room with someone closer to their age. Who knows?
Right.
But at least let them have an opportunity to voice what they would like. And then you use your negotiation skills, and you sit here and you say, okay, well, this is what we're dealing with, and we've got to come up with a solution.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you propose? What do you, you know, how do you think we can make this work? And when children are, it's hard for some parents to understand, but when children are given an opportunity to have a voice in something, they are more likely to cooperate and comply.
Yeah.
But the cooperation is what's important. Well, you know, I understand that there is a problem here. I can see why this may not work or why that may not work.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I may not like it, but this is what I need to do.
Yeah, and acknowledging the difficulty and acknowledging
mm-hmm.
that maybe this isn't going to be a perfect, ideal situation, but what do you think might be the best that we could come up with? And,
exactly.
yeah, just that very willingness to allow someone to have a say, it just diffuses the defensiveness. It just, people are more willing to give and take when they're allowed the opportunity, as opposed to, you know, if we push, we get resistance. So, yeah.
Well, that's right. And you have some of the issues that are challenges that I've dealt with, you know, the children from one family were used to sleeping in double beds,
mm-hmm.
but they don't want to share a double bed with
right.
the other children. And so now they're relegated to a single bed or a bunk bed in the same room. And,
right.
you know, so you can't change that situation oftentimes because of the logistics of things, but you might be able to give them a choice and say, well, you know, who wants to sleep on top and who wants to sleep on bottom? And then start
mm-hmm.
talking about the advantages of one or the other or,
right.
you know, and stay focused on the positive aspects
mm-hmm.
of this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so oftentimes we get caught up in listening to the complaints. And, you know, we have a hard time trying to figure out how to turn this into a positive.
Yeah, and focusing on solutions.
Yes.
Instead of what's wrong, you know, acknowledging the challenging aspects of it. So what do you think we could do to solve that? And really trying to stay focused on possible solutions and get some creative brainstorming going on.
Well, and I think it's important to understand that, you know, it's easy for parents to say, well, this is what we should do because
mm-hmm.
this makes the most sense.
Mm-hmm.
But
right.
the ultimate problems are going to be the children's problems.
Right.
And the children need to be involved in the solution.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're the ones that are having to, you know, when two adults marry, they want to share the same room with one another.
Right.
They're ready to blend that family, but the children aren't quite in the same place. Not
right.
Not only maturity wise, but also, you know, they've been through many transitions by the time they get to
right.
an extended family.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's sometimes why they'll kind of finally dig their heels in when it comes to things like who they share a room with. It's like, all right, I didn't have a say about, you know, who you're going to marry or you falling in love, but by golly, who sleeps in my bed or bedroom? I want to have a say about.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I think that can kind of be a last straw for kids. Talking about transitions, I'd like to actually transition to the next question, which is about transitions, because I think this is what I hear the most frustration from parents is some of the transitioning issues that happen from going to one home to another, particularly when parents aren't on the same page. So I'd kind of like to move into some of that less than ideal area around handling different transitions. So let's say things are different in the other household. I'm going to ask you next about parenting style issues when parents can't agree on that. But what about transitioning between these homes, especially if they're really different? I mean, that's kind of the way it is. You can't change the other parent. And so what are some things that parents can do, maybe before or after a visit, to help children manage those transitions a little bit better?
Well, you kind of touched on something that we tell our parents a lot. You can't change another person, but you can certainly change the way you react to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the way the adults react in this situation is going to have a tremendous influence on what happens with the children. And so there again, you try to focus on the positive. These transitions, I mean, problems can be caused because belongings are left at one home or the other. You know, one parent may say, well, I gather everything up and make sure these kids have everything they need.
Mm-hmm.
And the other parent said, well, you know, the kid's old enough to do that themselves now. So if they forget something, they just need to pay the consequences for mm-hmm. leaving it there. And they can get it next time they come.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so when that kind of stuff happens, both parents need to be supportive of what the other parent is trying to teach or trying to do, whether they agree with it or not.
Right.
You know, children don't want to hear criticism about their other parent.
Mm-hmm.
I think what we don't understand is the parent that is doing the criticism is creating more of a conflict with their own relationship with their child
mm-hmm.
than they're creating by criticizing the other parent.
Yeah.
Because children don't want to hear the criticism. So even though you may not agree with what has happened in the other parent's home, unless it's a safety issue, you just kind of go with the flow and you say, well, you know, that's how things go at your mom's or that's how things go at your dad's. But when we're in our house, this is what we expect.
And so what about those situations that I think are very common where it's not a flow, it's a very choppy, rocky transition just because the rules are so different at the other home, the parenting styles are completely opposite. Sometimes there is sabotage or, you know, maybe if somebody only sees the child on the weekends or not very often, and so maybe they lavish the child, you know, kind of spoil them. And the children are young, and so to be able to help them understand, it's difficult for them to understand that, oh, well, you know, here it's different here and here it's different there, and it's difficult for them to understand that when they're younger. What are some suggestions that you maybe, is there anything in terms of when kids first arrive home or anything along those lines that parents could do when they see the transit, you know, kids come walking in and they're still operating on the way things were at the other house. And so they walk in and they're doing maybe what would be inappropriate in this house because maybe they're younger and they haven't figured out how to transition because it's just so different. Is there anything parents can do on their end when kids come in to ease that transition, because I think it's just naturally going to happen. So if it's going to happen, if maybe we can give them some suggestions for something they can do, it might help smooth it from really rocky, choppy waters into something at least a little bit more smooth.
Well, one of the things that we need to keep in mind as parents is children are very resilient, and we've got to think, you know, if we can't think right off quickly what we want to resolve this particular issue, one of the things to remember is to make sure that the love comes through.
Mm-hmm.
Children will gravitate towards the parent that makes them feel the safest and the most secure. And if both parents are doing that, what a wonderful environment for that child in both
mm-hmm.
of their homes.
Right.
And so you've got, you know, when your child comes home, you, of course, welcome them home. You don't drill them about what happened at the other parent's home. You know, if they want to share, you listen without trying to fix it. You listen and you say, well, you know, I'm glad you enjoyed your time with your other parent. You know, and there's always the redirect. Well, you know, what would you like to do on your first day back, especially if they've been with the other parent for an extended period of time?
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, you try to get focused on the child and what the child is feeling, what the child's telling you. You know, if the child comes in and is just very upset, don't jump to conclusions, especially with young children. I hear this often with parents who, you know, they cry every time the other parent drops them off.
Mm-hmm.
Or every time I try to give them to the other parent, they cry. They don't want to go with that other parent. Well, when you've got a 2-year-old or a 3-year-old or even a 4-year-old, it's not that they don't want to go with the other parent. It's that they don't want to leave the parent they're with.
Mm-hmm.
Once they make that transition and they're with that other parent, they're just fine.
Mm-hmm.
But it's understanding how difficult it is, you know, to make that transition. You know, the child has been in this home for a while, and they've gotten used to the way things are in this home, and now they're being asked to change what
right.
they do, live in a household where the expectations might be different. People don't like change that much.
Right.
I mean, children don't like change that much. So the crying or the fussing about going with the other parent may not have anything to do with their feelings for the other parent or their comfort with the other parent.
Mm-hmm.
It could just be that they just are tired of making the change.
Yeah, it's another separation.
It is. And
yeah,
so,
and they're repeatedly having to separate.
Yeah, so when I say focus on the kids, try to listen to what they have to say. Make them feel welcome in your home if you're the receiving parent. Get them involved in what's going on in your home now.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah.
When
I think you said something really important, and I always, whenever I can pull out a teaching moment, and I think what I'm really hearing is, for everyone listening who goes through this, also to not take what the child's doing so personally.
Right.
Because what I'm hearing is when they're crying because they don't want to leave me, that implies something negative about the other parent. And it could just be a positive sign that we've bonded very well, and that's just difficult. And likewise, when I'm receiving the child and they're crying because they don't want to leave the other, to not take that personally that they don't like me and that I have to somehow win them back with food or candy and buying them things. And that's not it. It's just that it's difficult for them. It's always going to be difficult for a child to leave a parent when they're really bonded and close and can't be with them all the time.
That's
so
right.
to maybe not take all this so personally and feel that we have to somehow manipulate the child, that this is a contest for who they love the more, and based on how much they cry or don't cry at the handoff is somehow an indicator of who they love more. What I'm hearing is that that's not it at all. It's just that the child may be having difficulty letting go and having to leave comfortable places on a regular basis.
That's right. And so oftentimes, you know, parents will jump to the conclusion that something awful is happening at the other parent's house when that's not it at all.
Right. Okay.
And so operate from a positive attitude. You know, don't jump to conclusions about things that might be happening negatively. Greet your child. Let them know that you love having them back. get them involved in the routines fairly quickly. I mean, they know what the routines are in each one of the homes.
Right.
And so get them back involved. Make them feel comfortable. You know, they're back at their other home now. Don't make them feel like a visitor or a guest.
That's a good suggestion. And I'm also hearing that routines would be important in that transition. So to have some kind of a routine when kids come back, here's what we do, now we're back here, here's how things operate. And if there's going to be some of those, well, let's play it by ear kinds of things, of maybe allowing having that transition occur so that it's something that they can reliably count on, which would help a transition. And then once they've kind of made that transition, then they could go for more impromptu kinds of things, rather than coming in and not knowing what's going to happen.
Exactly. And the other thing that you need to keep in mind is that your child's temperament. You know,
right.
Every child is going to react differently to a transition. And
right.
Some children may just need some downtime, some quiet time for an hour or two when they move from home to home. Other children may just want to get busy and, you know, go play with the puppy that they didn't get to see for a few days, or, you know, they may want to jump right into an activity. But you really have to know your children and know what's comfortable for them. And that's why I say checking with them. You know, well, what would you like to do now? You know, we're so glad to have you home. What would you like to do now? Would you like some downtime? Would you like to go out in the backyard and play with Scruffy, that you haven't seen for a while, or would you like to just sit here with Mom or Dad and just visit for a while?
Yeah.
You know?
And I'd actually like to come back. I'm going to do a little station break. We're at 40 after we do a little station break. I actually want to come back to that because I actually had a family in my class very recently that had a lot of these issues, and what the child wanted to do when he came in was really not okay. So I'll hang everybody out there on that limb while we do the our 40-minute station break real quick and come back, and we'll move into some parenting-style issues and how parents can resolve those. Let me just say, for those of you who may have just joined us, this is Parents Tool Talk. I'm your host, Jody Johnston Powell, author of The Parents Tool Shop, and today we're talking with Deborah Cashin on the subject of blended families. So if you have any questions about our topic today, you can either call in at area code 347-205-9654. That's 347-205-9654, and then hit the 1 on your phone keypad if you want to raise your hand with a question, or you can send us a question using the chat room at parentstooltalk.com. So I believe, Chris, our producer, has some announcements for you, and actually I think I will be throwing in a bonus one at the end based on our conversation. So, Chris, share with them the resources that we have for them this week. This month.
Sure, Jody, I can do that. We have two resources we would like to introduce to our listeners today. The first is an audio recording from one of Jody's in-person parenting classes, and it's titled Blended or Tossed, What is Your Parenting Style? In this one-hour class, Jody helps parents discover whether their current style of parenting is best for reaching their parenting goals. She also offers suggestions for improving teamwork with parenting partners and reveals the 6 reasons why even effective parenting tools might not work. This resource is a $10 download from the Parents Tool Shop website, or $15 for a CD mailed right to your door. Our second resource this month is another audio recording. This is a teleseminar discussion between Jody and several parents called Dealing with Difficult People. And in this teleseminar, Jody shows how anyone can take Jody's unique universal blueprint for parenting success formula and use it to improve any adult relationship. She offers very practical tips that you can use when you have to be around negative or critical people at home or at work. So this is a great audio to listen to before the fall holiday season to immunize yourself against toxic family members that you might have to see. It's also available as a $10 download or $15 on CD. And in addition to this, we have a special offer from our guest today, Deborah Cashin. She has offered a resource called the Co-Parenting Resource Booklet. And this resource should be available by late next week. Is that right, Deborah?
That's right.
Okay. And you can tell Deborah about your interest in this resource by emailing her at Deborah, D-E-B-O-R-A-H, at parentingpartnerships.com. And just to let everybody know, to get the secure online order links for the two resources of Jody's that we mentioned, you can go to parentstooltalk.com/links. That's www.parentstooltalk, all one word, .com/links. And I'll have things back over to you, Jody. And I was hoping if perhaps Jody, you and Deborah, while we have her live on the air, if you could talk a little bit about this co-parenting resource booklet and whether the resource was designed with a particular parenting situation in mind to help our listeners decide if it's right for them.
Good. Deborah, I'll let you take that question, and then I'll share with folks an additional resource that I've thought of to offer here while we were talking today. So, Deborah, offer a few words about your resource.
The Co-Parenting Resource Booklet is something that we use in working with our families. It's not a publication yet, but we're willing to share that at no charge at this point for anyone who emails me and asks for our Co-Parenting Resource Booklet. It's got some great tips in it for parenting between two homes, whether you're single parenting or blended parenting. You will find some good tips in there to help you set up appropriate boundaries, set up appropriate transition routines, etc. So just email me at Deborah@parentingpartnerships.com, and I will be glad to forward it to you in an attachment.
Wonderful. Thank you. And in light of all the conversations that we've had around family meetings and family councils during this show, it occurred to me that I should mention to folks that Chapter 14 of the Parents Tool Shop book is possibly one of the most comprehensive and practical teachings of how to do family councils. It covers everything from the benefits and the purposes to the skills that you use, how to do them differently with younger kids versus older kids, how to teach children leadership skills and communication skills as a result of how you do them. I've got troubleshooting guides, sample agendas, all that kind of stuff. So it's a very comprehensive chapter. So if you have the Parents Tool Shop book, it's Chapter 14. If you'd like to get the Parents Tool Shop book, I believe there's almost always a link to the book on the parentstooltalk.com/links. I believe that you can get not only all the resources we've mentioned, but there should almost always be a link to the book there. So if you get the book, that Chapter 14 will tell you how to do those family councils, and there are some special tips for blended families in that chapter. So let's go back, because we've got a couple of things I want to make sure we really cover. I kind of left you all hanging that I was going to tell a story. There's a family that came to my parenting classes this past quarter, and they are involved in a very messy divorce, and kids are traveling back and forth. And when the other parent, and this is going to tie into and my lead into our parenting style issue question, is the parents that were attending my class are concerned because at the other home, their child constantly plays video games, and they mean constantly, to the point that the child is almost addicted to video games. He's about 4.5, almost 5. He's starting to develop some ADHD kinds of issues. There's a lot of behavior issues. Their routine when he comes home to their home is they like to spend family time, have some time together playing a game together or having dinner together, and then after they eat, then he's allowed to play video games, and it's a much more structured, time-limited kind of way that they do that. And so every time this child comes in, the parents say it's like this constant mantra, when do I get to watch? When do I get to play? When do I get to play? When do I get to play? And he says, seriously, like 1,000 times, you know, in that first hour or so. And so what he wants to do, you know, when they ask, what do you want to do, that's all he wants to do. And they offer the routine, but it's just that this other parent's style is so drastically different that the behaviors that he brings into their home are things that really pose some challenges. And I will just give you a quick, I'll finish the story because I have a feeling your suggestions will back this up. You know, after listening to a lot of complaints week after week, you know, there comes a conclusion where, you know what, you can't change the other parent. All you can do is change yourself. We worked with them in the class around just implementing the skills that they were learning in the parenting class so that at least on their home base, that he was getting good parenting and learning structure and rules and all that kind of thing. And the class was 6 weeks long, and by the end of it, they really were starting to see some results, particularly when the child was there. And the transition wasn't quite as difficult when he came each week. It was starting to get a little bit better, and he was starting to understand more how things operated in their home. But it was very frustrating for them, and I think it was a difficult shift for them to quit complaining about the other parent and using that as an excuse for why, you know, oh, well, nothing will work out because it's the other parent's fault, and to really help them shift into saying, look, there is something we can do on our end, and even though I can't change the other parent, there's ways I can change on my end that maybe will affect how much this child can learn this different behavior and learn how we operate in this home. So how can parents work through parenting style issues, both between the new couple, because this couple also, you know, they're newly married, they're trying to figure out how they want to do things, and they aren't even disagreeing or agreeing all the time, plus then they've got their exes who are doing things very differently. So what are some suggestions you've got to help parents work through those challenges?
Well, I've got 4 suggestions.
Ooh, I like numbers.
Yes.
All right, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Number 1, establish the step-parent as more of a friend or counselor rather than the disciplinarian.
Okay.
Until they have bonded, you know, developed a solid bond with the kid.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And that's not the sugar daddy friend, you know, I spoil them. That's
right.
Okay.
They're just a friend or a counselor, but they're supporting the rules of the house. The key to making all of this work is to create a list of family rules, discuss the rules with the children, post those rules, and let the children understand that these are house rules. They're not stepmom's rules or dad's rules or stepdad's rules or mom's rules. These are household rules. And, you know, part of your family meeting process probably explains this, but, you know, the more involved the children are in setting up the rules, because they know what they are, the more easily you're going to get them to comply with the rules.
Mm-hmm.
And try to understand what the rules are. The third one is try to understand what the rules are and the boundaries are for the kids and their other residents. And if possible, be consistent. Now, when you've got this video issue, you know, my first approach would be to try to talk with the other parent, the video parent, and say, you know, I understand he likes to play videos a lot when he's over here, but is there some way we can get together and talk about this and maybe get some of the rules more consistent? And then when you meet with that other parent, you know, explain to them your concerns. That's all you can do. And if the other parent says, well, I don't believe that. I don't believe it's harming them. I don't believe that it's hurting them in any way. And that's what he likes to do when he's at my house. Then you say, okay,
mm-hmm.
Can't change that. You've made the effort to try to get the rules consistent between homes, but if it doesn't work out, you just stay consistent with the rules in your home.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to take the video, I think this other parent was very correct, if you try to take the video away from them completely,
right,
you're going to create a lot more challenges.
Mm-hmm.
By limiting the video and giving them something to look forward to once the family time has been established, you know, they at least have that to look forward to.
Right.
The fourth one is when you're merging two families, you're going to have some differences in parenting. You're going to have discipline differences. Your lifestyle may differ. Just make it a priority to have some kind of unity in your own home. You can't control what's going on in the other parent's home, but you can control what goes on in your home.
Right.
And children thrive on routines.
Mm-hmm.
And especially young children. So within your own blended family, agree on some consistent guidelines. Let the children know that the step-parent and the parent are united I think that's important. If there's a perception of bias or prejudice, children pick up on that right away.
Mm-hmm.
So make sure that that unity is there between the adults in the household.
Right.
And like I said, you try your best to work it out with the other parent. We have a number of processes in place here in Texas to facilitate that. One of them is called parenting coordination. You know, we also do something called co-parenting assistance. Parenting coordination is a court-ordered process. Co-parenting assistance is a volunteer process. Sometimes it takes working with a third party to come up with a solution that works for these kids in both of their homes.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. That might be an option if you have an uncooperative parent.
Right. And for those folks who aren't in Texas, could you describe to us what that looks like, what kind of professionals provide that, so that if someone in another state would like to find out if there's a similar kind of service in their area, is it a certain credential that they would look for or a type of name? Describe what that would look like, because we've just got really about one or two more minutes.
Well, there's only about 7 or 8 states that have parenting coordination statutes. So not all states have a profession called parenting coordination.
Okay.
I would look under co-parenting assistance, co-parenting facilitation, along those lines. As far as the professionals providing this service, oftentimes you'll have your mental health professionals that will provide that service. We have a lot of certified family life educators that are out there providing this service. If there's a parenting center in your community, or, the parenting center would definitely have some resources available for that.
Do you think my best
advice would be to search the web.
Okay, and do you think that if they were to just contact the court that their divorce is through, that they might know of some providers? If they were to ask about co-parenting assistance?
That's a possibility.
Okay. All right.
It depends on how large of an area that court services, but
right.
That's a possibility.
Okay. And like the United Way information and referral, sometimes I think it's HelpLink or 211 in a lot of states, they might also know.
Yes.
So we'll leave folks with some national resources that might be consistent among states as we go into our wrap-up. We are coming to the end of the show. If I could just do a real quick recap, our guest today has been Deborah Cashin, and we've been talking about blended families. Deborah, I appreciate so much all the insights and practical advice that you've given us.
Thank you.
Good. Now, foster parents, remember to check out from the call for your continuing education hours by either sending a chat message or staying on the line for just an extra minute so we can note your phone number, and then send your reminder email to questions@parentstooltalk.com, and we can verify your attendance. If you would like to order this month's featured resources, you can go to www.parentstooltalk.com/links. With an S on the end. Also, go there to sign up for the Parents Tool Talk mailing list so that you can get access to all of our post-show bonus resources this month and every month to follow. That web address, again, is www.parentstooltalk.com/links. So thanks again, Deborah, for joining us today. I've learned so much, and I really enjoyed our time together. Any final comments you want to make before the exit music starts playing?
I would just like to thank you for having me as a guest on your show.
Well, thank you so much. And thank you, everyone else, for tuning in and joining us today. Feel free to send people to the Parents Tool Talk website, where you can download all of our previous shows and can listen to those. So thank you again for joining us today on Parents Tool Talk. I'm Jody Johnston-Powell. My website is www.parentstoolshop.com. And next month, we're going to be covering our topic on teen dating. And so we hope that you all will have a wonderful month. Back to school has started. So if you do want to head over to parentstoolshop.com, I have 13 articles on back to school time. So thank you again for tuning in. Everybody have a great September, and we will talk to you next month about teen dating. Have a great weekend and a great month to follow. Talk to you all next month.